Good evening, or if you are in different parts of the world, good morning, you never know. I'm moving to Australia, so I'll be saying that probably good morning. I have a practice that I call the bridge, which is before I go into silence, I do something, whether it's bowing or chanting. And I got this from monastic life where, you know, you're going through your day and then for the mind to catch up can be a little bit challenging. So I'll do a little bit of stretching or, you know, something like that. So I'm going to invite you, if you are physically inclined or if you want to join us, to just do a little exercise, okay? So first thing is take your fingers and put them on your shoulders. And then with your elbows, you go forward, face the sky, face the back, face the earth. Twice more. Front, sky, back, earth. Front, sky, back, earth. And now change directions three times. So whatever direction you are going, go the other way. Once you've done the three, give you a little bit of a tap on your shoulders, your arms, a little bit of tapping on your forehead. Now, hagan estrellitas, so my second grade teacher used to say in El Salvador, make little stars. So anytime you can just make little stars. And now what I say to my high school students, get rid of anything you don't need right now. Just send it away. Brush any energy that right now it's not needed. And that can be our bridge. I have a feeling that some of you have meditated for a while. I recognize Kyle, I think. And I recognize other people. And living in the United States of America, accomplishment is celebrated. So if you accomplish two things, that's good. If you accomplish 20 things, that's great. And if you accomplish 200 things, that's like superb. And if you are breathing a culture where accomplishment is celebrated, consciously or unconsciously, we can take that to our meditation practice. And you probably have heard that. But what would it be like? This is the image that I like to think about, is those old satellite dishes. I think some people still use them, like used to see them. And then you can get any cable channel. It doesn't matter whether it's a soap opera or, you know, a documentary. It's just receptive. And to be receptive to the world, to meditate while you have a meditation object or you're just sitting, but just with the attitude that we're not here to accomplish and not to judge. As you know, if you meditated, a lot of the benefits come when you're not sitting down. One of the great things about Zoom is that if you don't like the sound of my voice, if you just want to take a break from a guided meditation, you just can mute me. So you just put the volume to zero, and then you can have a great old time listening to your own thoughts without me saying anything. So I will invite you to at any point to do that. Okay. This is my little shrine. So I'm going to, when I go into silence, I'm going to sit in my safu, which is right to the right. But we'll start with guided meditation just to get us started. Maybe it's another kind of bridge. So if you feel comfortable, you can gently close your eyes. And let's start with some Katanyuta Bhavana, which is in Pali, it is the cultivation of gratitude. And we just do that. Gratitude, the definition in the scriptures is noticing what you have received. If you actually take a conscious moment to notice what you have received, And then gratitude may or may not arise, but the cultivation is to notice. So right now, let's think about our baby lifetime. We've had a few lifetimes already. And just bring to mind, if you know, a person who fed you when you were a few days old. Just bring to mind that you are alive because some adults fed you. Doesn't matter what their mental state was or how things were, you were given food as a baby. So think you can say their name inside of you. And as we move forward in our lives, let's move on to being a toddler. Do you have a memory of a toy or something that brought you joy when you were very little, your earliest memories? From early childhood, first grade, is there a friend or a sibling that you could giggle with? Did you have the blessing to have a playmate? Just bring them to mind. Was there an adult that was kind to you? If we move to 10 years old and younger, is there an adult that you can bring to your heart right now? Have them sit with you today. Just say their name if you want. Were you blessed? Were you fortunate enough to have someone love you? As a teenager, was there someone at all that could listen to you for those years? Was there one person? And if there wasn't, you listen to yourself because we have survived. Here we are. And from young adulthood to now, has there been a mentor that you appreciate? However you define the word mentor. And just say their name and acknowledge that they have been part of your life. So we looked into our past, now let's look at the present. Do you have a roof over your head? Just notice that this roof protects you from the weather, allows you to sleep. And if you don't have a roof, have something that protects you. Have you had some food and water today? Go back in the day. If you're not fasting today, think of one of the things you ate. Notice that that is nourishing our body. Do you have enough clothing right now? Is there a closet somewhere where you keep clothes? And are there medicines or things that help your well-being? Because once you have shelter, food, medicine, and clothing, everything else is a blessing. And if one of those four things is missing, noticing what it does to our heart. But right now we have enough health, enough time to be here in a rainbow sangha, encouraging each other to awaken. As if we bring the present I want you to notice the sounds that you hear near and far for a few moments, maybe a minute or two. The meditation object is just listening, using the hearing and the sounds as your meditation object. With very gentle awareness, internally label this moment. Does this moment feel pleasant? Does it feel both pleasant and unpleasant? Does it feel neither? Or does this moment feel unpleasant? And with those four options, allowing to be what it is, the one who knows, Buddha. In Thailand, they have a mantra, well, maybe not a mantra practice. As you inhale, you internally say Bu, and as you exhale, you say Do. This is a practice of the Thai forest masters, Buddha. And this is Buddha knowing the Dhamma, the wise ones experiencing life as it is, noticing whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, having the patience, having the awareness to be with everything that is going on within us, not demanding for it to change, not accomplishing, but seeing. So if you like, you can try this practice. If you have a practice of your own, I invite you to do that, whether it's counting the breath, paying attention to the breath, trying Buddha. You You don't change the speed of the breath. You simply notice if you're breathing fast, then your buttos are going to be fast. If you are breathing slowly, then your bu and your do are going to be slow. So being in Sangha and a blessing, let's practice in silence for a bit. as we come to the end of this silent time, checking in with our bodies. Overall, are the sensations of our bodies pleasant? Unpleasant? Both or neither? Just noticing how our body is, and what category we put it in, and then what do we do with that? Notice our mental state. Does it fit one of those? Are we experiencing both pleasant and unpleasant? Is it neutral? Or is it a hard time to be with our thoughts right now? Is it pleasant because we're distracted or because we're joyful? Checking in with our emotions. Is there anything that is pretty much alive right now? Just noticing it, if it registers as lovely or difficult, a little bit of both, or just a sense of neutrality. And that we're just observing. As one of my teachers says, intuitive awareness. Mindfulness is the path to the deathless, the scriptures say, and he likes to repeat. What is it that is timeless here and now? The Buddha knowing the Dhamma. Finishing again with bhavana, cultivation of katanya, just gratitude. Grateful for Spirit Rock for offering this. For all the people that have created technology. For the people that have shown up tonight as we grow together. May this practice benefit ourselves in our daily lives. Maybe we heal our past. Go forward in the future with strength. May benefit our loved ones. May our spiritual practice help us deal with difficult people in our lives. may our spiritual practice benefit all beings. For being here, I'm going to ask for a 2-minute bio break for everybody. And during this time, if there are any questions that you have about the Buddha practice or any meditation question that you might have, I've been meditating for over 30 years. I still don't think I'm an expert because, every day is different. But if there's any questions, put them in the chat. I've taught, and I've spoken about the Four Noble Truths a lot. And every time I reflect on it, there's a nuance or something that I find quite useful. The Four Noble Truths are put in the framework of Ayurvedic medicine. So there's a disease, there's a cause of the disease, there's the prognosis, and then there's the treatment. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was quite a little arrogant 24-year-old, and I ended up being a monk. And I was like, well, enlightenment is kind of like getting a master's degree. You just kind of do this stuff and then you get your diploma of enlightenment. Like, because there are some scriptures about getting rid of defilements and then you end up, as a stream enterer, or you end up as a once returner, or you end up as an arahant. So there's these titles of spiritual attainment. And so I thought things could be linear like that. And perhaps it works for some people. But I find that it's very labyrinthian, very circular, because your karma ripens. It alarms me that meditation and mindfulness, now that it's a business, is being sold as a panacea that will get rid of your anxiety, that will give you peace of mind, that it's this relaxation thing. It's another bullet point. Exercise, eat well, do some mindfulness. And if you do it the way the ancient ones talk about it, it can be quite difficult. One of my favorite stories in Thailand was the one about the demons. And they said, let's say you're a poor guy and you owe money. And the people that you owe the money to, they don't knock on your door because they know that you've got no money. But once you have something, then they're like, nah, 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 knocking at your door. Said the demons, and that, they're archetypes to mean the difficult things, trauma, all that stuff. If you're not practicing spiritually, if all your life is about, having fun and distracting yourself or doing unwholesome things, the demons stay there. But once you start trying and you meditate, some things can arise. And that's what sometimes scares me, is that you can get that app, you can do that, thing and just add it to your list. And what if something comes up? And so this dukkha thing, the First Noble Truth, in that discourse that mentioned, that there is a definition, like sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha. Say that. So I did a silent retreat. I mean, we did 3 months in silence every year. But one of these, I was sent to the Mekong River, and I would take each word, and I'm like, okay, where is sorrow? Where is sadness? The next list would be like, birth, sickness, aging, and death are dukkha. Not being with the loved ones is dukkha. Not being da-da-da, there was all this list, and I would just take each one per day. And I would just think about that. Why is birth considered dukkha? I was like, does it mean just being born? Does it mean rebirthing in the present moment, you know, so just kind of thinking about it. And some of them are obvious, right? Like pain. Yeah, pain. Well, some people love pain, so can that generalize? You know, like I know people that like to get tattoos because the experience of the pain is pleasurable. But I have one tattoo and my friend held my hand the whole time and I'm like, and it's here where it hurts the least, you know. But like pain and I are not good friends. And the second noble truth is basically you don't want the present moment to be what it is. Desire is absolutely normal. And so these translations from, you know, websites or something where like, especially Christian ones, sometimes I'll say, Buddhists will say that life is suffering. The cause of suffering is desire. That is such a mistranslation of tanha. Because you have greed, hatred, and delusion as the umbrellas. And is a desire for things to be different. When you attach, when you have that kind of like, right? That is, and paticca samuppada is the links. It's very Buddhist, you know. Every wise tradition, there are some rare beings who get it, right? Like Saint Teresa of Avila in Spain was able to meditate. And she was able to see things in ways that other people around her didn't. Well, that's like anything. Right? So these 12 links, it's called co-arising, or it's a 12 links of dependent origination. It's a description of the second noble truth. And all it says is you've got an eye and then you've got stuff. You know how they refer to people as eye candy? You know? Or you hear that sound and you want more of it. That's why I do some sessions on sex, love, I mean, sex, money, and food. Because the senses are so, in Buddhism, there's the five senses plus the mind. So when you have food, and I remember, you know, having just one meal a day during those, in my 20s. It's like you're smelling the food, you're hearing the crunch, you're tasting it, you're seeing it. Same with sex, right? You're tasting the person, you're hearing the person, you're looking at the person, you're touching the person, you have thoughts about the person. There's all of these avenues in which you could have attachment to desire. And then money, which is a mind thing that allows you to get all of these other essential things. But there's nothing wrong with desire. If you don't have it, you die. When you desire water, that's called being thirsty. So you drink the water. When you desire food, you get the food. So desire is beautiful. Desire is neutral. Desire can be unpleasant. Is this subtle attachment and gross attachment? And then the gospel in Buddhism is there's an end. He actually says you can end dukkha. And when you come from a European-based culture, you know, with influences from the other kind of enlightenment, and where thoughts are paramount, and you say, oh, if I'm enlightened, it's just going to be joy, and everything is just going to be beautiful, which is a mistranslation. Then the fourth noble truth is the tripod of Buddhism, Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Which is so useful because there are people now who don't teach about sila. Victorian translations is virtue. Nobody talks about virtue now. I am so virtuous. You know, like that just doesn't happen. And the word that gets used around here now is integrity. Yeah. Do my thoughts, my words, my actions align with the goodness of myself and others? And do I follow the five precepts? So with these precepts, if you're not killing someone, if you have the privilege to not have to think about stealing, right? Because if you have your basic needs, it's a privilege to not want to be a thief. You know? Words, I have ended two relationships by something I've said. And I can apologize 1,003 times and it didn't do anything. Like, words can be so powerful. I didn't mean, really, I really didn't mean to hurt, you know. But that's what happens. Exaggerating, lying, you know, all of those things can be difficult for some people. Doing half-truths. What if you have a life where the five precepts become second nature and your sila is that one leg of the tripod? So the Noble Eightfold Path, we have it divided into three, and the first one would be like right view and right intention, which is the panya part of it. So you have the sila, which is your virtue, and then you have your wisdom, and then you have meditation, which is the third leg. So in the Noble Eightfold Path, you have mindfulness and samadhi. Mindfulness is now a word that gets used a lot. There's Mac mindfulness. I met a guy here in San Francisco, and he was teaching, he was selling his services to companies to teach people in call centers to be mindful so that they would be more productive. So he would talk to the company and say, hey, teach them mindfulness and you'll get more out of them. He's like, oh, that's what you do, huh? It's like, it's really interesting. And then there's the mindfulness with a big M, which every religion I have studied talks about it in different ways. There is a danger to misrepresenting other traditions, but if you read the poetry of Rumi, or when you understand God is love, God not anthropomorphic, but, and love is very complicated in English, because you can love ice cream and love your grandma, and love your lover, you know. But being in the present, witnessing, allowing the moment as it is, then non-self, timelessness, they don't become religious dogma. It's simply descriptions of reality. That mindfulness allows you to experience non-duality. It's not even an experience. You know, it's you can't describe it. And my perception of current mindfulness explanations is that you're not multitasking. So I remember moving to San Francisco from Minneapolis and seeing a muni, and I would have, you know, like, there was this guy who was chewing gum. He has his iPod, and then he's looking at a screen. So he's listening, he's looking, he's standing, so he has to be aware of not falling. So he's doing all of these things. Like, that's what the world is like. It's like, you know, my students in high school, they are so addicted to their phones. Right? And so this engagement with the games and all of this. And so now people say, eat the blueberry mindfully. So you might eat the blueberry slowly. So people think that to be mindful is to be slow. And Ajahn V, one of my other teachers, used to say, how about athletes? They can be super fast. Martial artists can be incredibly mindful and fast. You can slow down. But, you know, some of the most mindful moments, if you were to define it like that, was at the BART station when I was going to Oakland in reverse commute. There were all these grumpy looking people coming into downtown San Francisco. And sometimes I would just fall into this peace. Other times I would just have fun. I had this game. I've never done paintball, you know, where you go to these things and you shoot people with a paint. But I would do this meta paintball game. People would be coming in and I'm like, May you be happy. 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 And by the time I got on the train, I was like, I had just wished a lot of these people happiness. And so you can practice in the most noisy of places. And these four noble truths, if you take them not as dogma, but as ways of reflecting, that suffering is the most mundane, most common thing. Lady Gaga and the Queen of England and you experience dukkha. It's just a human thing. Americans have a tendency, and I don't want to stereotype, but Americans have a tendency to glamorize their suffering. Isn't my suffering special? And I talked to someone about it. Actually quite a senior monk who's not American. And I was just checking in with him and I'm like, have you noticed that Americans will do that? And he's like, oh my God, yes, it's pathetic. I was like, whoa, that sounded judgmental to me. But there's this thing about, and you know, we were talking about how he was giving Dharma talks, and I have a very low profile as a Dharma teacher. I don't have a website. I just go where people invite me. But you know, he's been teaching for a while, and he was saying that sometimes in meetings, people would be almost competing about who has the most interesting dukkha. And also an American thing of like, oh, in my childhood, I was so poor. And then look at me now. And I think with queer people, you know, the experience of coming out or of experiencing the world with not the majority, many times we've had the opportunity to reflect or to look at things or to be challenged in ways that can be useful in the Dharma way. I'm going to ask you to go into small groups a little in a little bit. And I want you to think of this tripod idea, right? Of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. And if you want to go there with, you know, money, sex, and food, and your relationship, and how you work with that, or how you might like to work with that, I'll, you know, give you some frameworks, but I'm just announcing it now to sort of start thinking. What are our habitual patterns to how we deal with dukkha, with life? Because life, you know, and now that I know that I won't graduate with this full enlightenment thing where, you know, Ken Wilber has a whole framework on lines of development. So, you know, I studied gurus to get credit when I was a junior in college in Pune in India. And you could have a guru that has these amazing psychic powers and meditation powers, but then they would do something that's completely unethical. Like, how does that happen? You know, and why does it happen so often? You know, and I think, what if I hadn't left El Salvador? And my option would have been, you know, if I wanted, because I've had this spiritual bug since I was a little kid. What if I would have joined an order and being a queer person, would I have been one of those priests that abused someone? I don't know. Because in Minneapolis, I was going to a queer group when I was 15, and there would be these, you know, elders and people that would talk. This was in the 80s. It was funny, you know, these teenagers talking, and sometimes we'd be like, no, not another condom and a banana. Because they would give us these workshops on safe sex, and like, take your banana, put a condom, and I'm like, not again. You know, like, but then sex was like this really scary thing because the AIDS crisis was happening. But I had an opportunity to meet other people and have this idea that I was not a bad person.
It's 7 o'clock.
And it's a blessing whether, you know, my husband was raised Mormon and he came out in his 30s after being married to a woman and having two kids and seeing the contrast that even in this century, we can have such different experiences. And so I think, you know, there is a blessing to being in the rainbow spectrum, I think. You know, like we can be so much more open. And there's so many of us in our history and our ancestors that have loved the arts and have loved spirituality. And so sometimes our challenge is not to be, like one of my challenges is not to be lost in beauty. I go to the San Francisco Botanical Gardens, you know, they open at 7 a.m. If you go early in the morning, there'll be like two joggers and an old lady with an umbrella. I don't know. That seems like my experience. And I'm just like, look at this flower. Just like, oh, life is so beautiful. And if you get lost in sensuality, that's not so good. So I'm going to invite you to go into small groups. I would encourage to introduce yourself. So pronouns. So my pronoun is he, him, but Her Royal Highness also works. And, you know. think, you know, talk to people about how does your practice manifest when you think about meditation, wisdom, and integrity. You know that for some reason, samadhi, the eighth part of the Noble Eightfold Path, is incredibly controversial. It's the jhanas. So very few people can experience it. And I mentioned St. Teresa of Avila. She practiced the jhanas. In Sanskrit is dhyana. And jhana became chan. And there's a whole school of Chinese Buddhism called chan. And chan became zen in Japan. So, and now people talk about Zen as a decorating style. Oh my God, your room is so Zen. You know, like, it's crazy, right? How things through time become something else. Whether the jhanas are, you know, the first jhana, sometimes people experience it and they don't even know, where you are in a peaceful, concentrated time. And because we are in an American culture that has achievement, you have this thing where you do want to do the jhanas, and that's what's stopping you from actually concentrating the mind. And so it took me a while to think of, oh, what's needed here is humility and openness.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.